As I mentioned during the announcements, Olivier Melnyk is with us again. He's no stranger to most of us. We've seen him several times and always glad to have him back and talk to us. Let me tell you just a little bit more about him, though. He's the founder and executive director of Shalom in Messiah Ministries. He holds a BA from Moody Bible Institute and a master's degree from Dallas Seminary. Olivier is the son of Holocaust survivors from France. He's an international speaker and an authority on the topic of anti-Semitism and the author of seven books. Shalom in Messiah seeks to educate and mobilize Christians to fight the longest hatred with hope and prayer that this endeavor will allow us to rebuild bridges between Christians and Jews and to lead them to the Messiah. Olivier is married to Ellen, who led him to put his trust in Yeshua. So please welcome Olivier.
Thank you. Shalom. Good morning. What a joy being here. Thank you for your support. Thank you for your support. Your church has been, I've known Pastor Andy for a long time. And yeah, we go back probably 20 years, I think. Almost 20 years, yeah. And your church has been a supporter of our ministry and in prayer and financial, and it's been wonderful. So it's coming here is always like coming back home and seeing familiar faces. So thank you for your support. Keep praying for us. I'll give you some specifics later in the message on how you can pray for us, because I've got an upcoming trip, Lord willing, if it happens, departing on the 19th of August for 10 days in Israel with my wife and our VP of operation. We're going to be doing some work with the IDF and then different other ministries. I'll tell you more about it in a little bit. So again, for those of you who don't know about our ministry, we exist to expose and fight anti-Semitism, equip and mobilize Christians, lead Jewish people to Messiah, Yeshua. ShalomInMessiah.com. We have a lot of resources. We keep adding resources. Some of the resources we have on our website are the books that I usually bring with me, which I did not today because I'm literally in and out. But I've got these books on our site as well as Amazon. And the most recent one, Antisemitism in the End Times, which includes October 7th, 2023 and beyond. So you definitely want to get a copy of that. If you don't already have one, you probably know me. I have a lot of information, and I very often, which I did in Sunday school, I'll probably do it again, skip slides. So the best way to get my slides is to get them now. And for the incredible price of free. And if you don't get them now, or if that doesn't work, or if your phone is not cooperating with you, let me know, email me, and I can send them to you as a PDF later. And this is the same message as this morning. So I thought we had changed it. Okay, so end slideshow. And where do I find the other one? Michael! Somebody coming? Okay, so let's see if I have the other one here. Oh, I think, no, it's the same one. All right. I thought we had changed it, so talk amongst yourself. I'm trying to, is anybody coming to help me here? Because this is not a Mac. You guys should work with the Mac. This is anti-Semitic. It won't work with me. Yeah, that's, oh my gosh, it's taken over, it's possessed. Yeah, so that's the one from, yeah, okay. And good morning, my name is Olivier Melnyk. Hey, look, feels good? We're going fast. Okay, so I'm not, those are pins that I have, but I don't have them with me. Get my notes. Okay. Forget everything I said about the previous QR code. That's from the Sunday school. This is the one for this message. And let's close with a word of prayer. So we're back on track, and I've only lost 1.5 minutes. Okay. So the title of this message is A Progressive Conditioning Towards the Destruction of Israel. The reason why I want to do that, because I wanted to, number one, share with you something that I discovered recently in my research, and also not just share it with you, but equip you to debunk the lies. Because it's one thing to say, well, Israel is not guilty of this, Israel is not guilty of that, and then people who are anti-Zionist, anti-Semites, anti-Israel, they'll throw stuff at you and you'll go, well, I don't believe that. Well, prove me wrong. And we can't. We just know it's a lie. We just don't know how to debunk it. So I'm just going to talk to you about four progressive things that happened over the last several decades to take us to where we are right now. They keep continuing, but they build upon the previous one, and they're all lies. So I'm going to tell you about what it really means, how it's been misused, and how we can debunk it biblically, hopefully, in the time that we have. The challenge that we have right now is that if you say anything, people said that if you say anything against Israel, you're anti-Semitic. So it's like, you can have any criticism. And actually this, I really respect her. Her name is, I don't believe she's a believer, but she's a great analyst and political analyst. Her name is Melanie Phillips. She's written several books. And she said, anti-Semitism has been reframed as an attempt by Jews to mask their own conspiracy against the public good, and to conceal the crimes of the state of Israel. So people are saying that, we the Jews accuse anybody of anti-Semitism the minute they say anything remotely negative about the Jews or Israel. It's not true. If you say something that's valid, it should be accepted at face value. If it's valid, it's valid. But too often, criticism against Israel or against the Jews is rooted in anti-Semitism. So we have to, recognize it when it is. Now, there's been a shift, and that actually caught me by surprise. Week of July 2nd through the 9th, look at this. The global breakdown of incidents against Jews in 1 week, 64% done by the far left. I would have never guessed that it was that high. See, almost 65%, 25% by the far right, and 11% by Islamist-inspired people, or Islamists, or Muslims. And honestly, I would have thought that Islamist-inspired would have been higher. Now, this is 1 week in the whole year, 1 year in a decade, and so you have to compare. But I thought this was telling. There is a shift, and the really right now the far left and the woke right are working against Israel in ways that we've never seen before. There is a convergence of events. You've seen it. I mean, I'm sure you. I don't bring anything new to you that shows us that really the biblical days of Zechariah 12:3, when the whole world will go against Jerusalem, the whole world will go against the Jews, were there. As a matter of fact, there was a survey that was done in January or February of 2025 by the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League. The results said that at the time, that's a year and a half ago, 46% of all adults in the world harbored some kind of anti-Semitic sentiment. We're past the 50% now. So we're halfway through the fulfillment of Zechariah 12:3. Halfway. Now keep in mind that Zechariah 12:9 says that God will go after all those who go after Israel. That's the other side of that coin. So, God has a good memory. But recently, again, I mean, it's, acts of vandalism against Jews just for the sake of hurting the community. Like, for instance, in a suburb of Paris synagogue, 12 Torah scrolls stolen from a Paris synagogue. Just basically take the Torah scrolls, you know, from the synagogue, and you cripple the whole synagogue, because without their Torah scroll, the Jewish community cannot do services, or they have to acquire more. They're very expensive, and they probably were thrown away or destroyed. So that's in Paris. Of course, nothing to see in New York, right? Nothing happening in New York. Well, definitely no Little Israel on the New York City immigrant enclaves that Mamdani published. There's all kinds of things. Little Guyana in Queens, Little India, Little Odessa. Number 25, Little Palestine. No Little Italy. No Little Israel. Does that tell you anything? Watch that guy. That guy, Mamdani, is the poster boy for anti-Semitism right now. He is the canary in the gold mine. This is a warning to America. You know that already. Hundreds rally in New York City to condemn Mamdani after stabbing attacks. Jews don't feel safe in New York. You know why? Because they're not. They're not safe in New York, the largest community of Jews in America. Anti-Jewish hate crimes surge 53% in New York as Jewish leaders point to Mamdani. That's in New York. What about the rest of the world? You've heard about what happened in that little border, that little Ceuta town in North Africa by Morocco. That's actually a part of Spain. You know that it took only 3 days for the memes and the accusations to come online? Only 3 days. I didn't make this. This is something I picked up from a newspaper. It's initiated by Israel to... I don't even know how they spin that one. That Israel is sending those Muslim... And you notice, if you saw the videos, it's 99% young men of army age, of fighting age. Interesting. And then you interview them and they say, we come for tourism. Have we gotten so stupid? How about Montreal? Kosher restaurant burned to the ground. I have more. I could show you pictures after picture after picture of what's happening against our people. It's really concerning. It's picking up a lot of momentum. What I've showed you here, those images... 10 years ago, and I started this thing 26 years ago, 10 years ago and before, would have been the result of 1 year of research. This is a few days. A few days. Globally. By all people. Other things are happening, but nobody reports them. Because again, I said this morning, no Jews, no news. They are going not after Israel, not after the Israelis, after the Jews. You know, when Hamas invaded Israel on October 7, 2023, and the Hamas sons called their mom and dads on the phone, they didn't say, I killed Israelis, because they reported, they did FaceTime, and they showed the destruction, and they said, I killed Jews. Jews, not Israelis. The Israelis that they killed are all Jews, but they call them Jews, Yehudim. I call Jews. They are after the Jews. Why? Because it's satanic. They want to destroy Israel. So this progressive growth against Israel that I want to talk to you about, it comes in four words that I've noticed in my recent research that each one built upon the previous one. They're still all going together, but we are definitely in the final stage. When I look at it, I'm thinking of Israel is slowly being destroyed, like the proverbial frog in the pot. When you put the frog in, you turn the water real slow. It's a slow destruction of Israel. And those are colonization, occupation, apartheid, and genocide. Right now, you probably hear it all over the news. Genocide. genocidal country, genocidal people, genocide. They're killing the Jews. They're killing the Palestinians. They're starving the people in Gaza. The children are dying of starvation. They're killing, genocide. But before that, we had colonization, occupation, apartheid. It still happens, and there are lies, but it's grown to the point of now, everybody is hearing about genocide, and a lot of people are buying it because they're not doing any research. They just think it's the truth. So let's go through each one. First, colonization. There's a couple of definitions for colonization. A, the establishing of a colony, subjugation of a people or area, especially as an extension of state. Or B, migration to and settlement in an inhabited or in uninhabited area. So the first definition, this one, you think of, well, Israel is being accused of colonization, settler colonization, and of course, there might have been some slight other examples in the history of mankind that maybe happened, but maybe they were not as bad as Israel, like the French Empire, for instance, that took over half of Africa and places all over the world and Canada and seriously, nobody said anything, nobody's saying anything except maybe for the people that were displaced at the time. But if the French Empire is not enough, how about the British Empire on which the sun never sets? Why is that statement? Because there's always somewhere in the world where you go that is owned by, you know, by the British Empire, or so to speak, like Australia, India, you know, think about those countries over the years and the centuries, Canada. And so nobody seems to be bothered by those big colonizations. But Israel, who is not colonizing, by the way, because this is the land, as we'll see in a minute, given to them by God, is accused of colonization. So there's another definition, which is migration to and settlement in an inhabited or uninhabited area. There was a letter that was sent by not the best friend of the Jews during World War II, FDR. Not the best friend of the Jews, to be honest with you. But at that point, he tried to do something. Letter to the U.S. State Department to ask for Jewish colonization because of European persecution. He sent that letter, which is on the screen. You probably can't read it, but will you send me by return pouch any information the State Department the State Department has in regards to possible places for Jewish colonization in any part of the world, any part of the world. It's not like send them to Israel, you know, send them anywhere. And why is that? He was asking because of persecution, asking for relocation. Very, very fair request, asking for relocation. What was that? If you look at the date, November 26, 1938, is 16 days after the events of November 9th and 10th, the night of November 9th through 10th of 1938, Kristallnacht, the night of broken glass, where synagogues were destroyed, Jewish people were killed, which is recognized by historians as the starting point of the Holocaust. So FDR saw that. He says, okay, this is not good. The Jews are going to suffer more damage. We got to do something if we can. So he realized that. So that at least was good. So that was 1938. Later on in the war, he made some mistakes that's not neither the place nor the time to discuss them. But at least there was that. Then there was a letter known as the Cambon letter from France that was written just a few months before the Balfour Declaration was written by Lord Balfour and given to Lord Rothschild to explain to them that there was a right to go back to the ancestral biblical land of Israel. And it said it would be a deed of justice and of reparation to assist by the protection of the Allied powers in the rebirth of the Jewish nationality in that land from which the people of Israel were exiled so many centuries ago. So this man, Jules Cambon, writing to Zionist Nahum Sokolow, recognizes that Israel has a right to exist. That's 1917. And now I want to talk about, I'll skip that, British Mandate Palestine. I want to talk about the one, number one person who accuses Israel of colonization. Of course, he's dead, but his name was Yasser Arafat. He continually accused Israel of colonizing Palestinian land. Palestinian land. Now, you know, I want to show you a picture of the National Museum of Palestinian History. I just discovered. I mean, this is big, okay? Because you know, people say Palestine didn't exist. They don't have a language. They don't have a culture. They don't have. It's all Arabic. It's a myth. So I want to show you a picture of the recently taken of the National Museum of Palestinian History. That's what you can find if you go there. Now, that won't stop those who are trying to promote the idea that Palestine is the Palestinians are a displaced people. And it can even be subliminal. What do I mean by that? Most of you, I would even venture to say, all of you probably never knew what I'm about to show you on the next slide. I want you to notice, you know where the keffiyeh is, the head covering that Arafat made so famous. Did you know that he was wearing it not on his head and in the back of his head like most people in the Middle East do, but he's the only person who ever wore it on his head and then pinned to his jacket in the shape of Israel. Every picture you see of him, he wears it in the shape of Israel. Nobody wears it like this, before him or after him. Subliminal, but it's there. But just very interesting. In Sunday school, I mentioned the Grand Mufti of Israel. Guess who's related? They're cousins, or he is the nephew of the Grand Mufti. There's two different family venues, but they're related. You know, and it's interesting because Arafat was a Palestinian, but he was born in Egypt. So how do you reconcile that? Well, you can't, but, you know, who bothers with facts anymore? In 1967, after the Six-Day War, this is a quote from him, "Our basic aim is to liberate the land from the Mediterranean Sea to the Jordan River." He doesn't even call it Israel, by the way. "We are not concerned with what took place in June 67 or in eliminating the consequences of the June War. The Palestinian Revolution's basic concern is the uprooting of the Zionist entity from our land and liberating it." And then in 74 at the UN, because he was invited to speak at the UN, why not? I mean, as well. "Just as colonialism heedlessly used the wretched, the poor, the exploited as mere inert matter with which to build and to carry out settler colonialism, so too were destitute, oppressed European Jews employed on behalf of world imperialism and of the Zionist leaders. European Jews were transformed into the instruments of aggression. They became the elements of settler colonialism, intimately allied to racial discrimination." And of course, every time I'm going to give you a quote, I will give you the source so you know that I'm not making it up. So Arafat was a big pusher of this, you know, this accusation of colonization. And when you think about those four steps, colonization is trying to grab land that is not yours, like the British Empire, the French Empire. And then once you have it, you keep it and it's yours. And, you know, in most cases, it remains that way. And the world has kind of learned to live with that. So colonization is we expand. Then occupation is next. Not only we expand our territory, but we send our people and we occupy. You know, we live in those land that we have taken. And then is apartheid is the idea of, it's not only that we occupy, we want to push people out because we really want it to be all for ourselves. And then if that doesn't work, we'll kill the people. Genocide. So that's the progression that Israel is accused of. Okay? So biblically debunking colonization. Well, we just read that one during in the beginning of service and in Sunday school, Genesis 12, 1 through 3, that's the promise that God made to Abraham and his descendants. He made a promise. He ratified that promise in Genesis 12, 1 through 3. He ratified it in Genesis 15, 18 through 21, when he gave the boundaries to Abraham when Abraham was put to sleep and the Shekinah glory walked through the split animals and God made the covenant with Abraham and his descendants, but Abraham did not walk through, so could not break as part of the covenant. That's why it's unilateral and unconditional, which is so critical. And that's foundational to so much of our Bible. So He gave the land there, the Kenite, the Kenizzite, the Kadmonite, the Hittite, the Perizzite, the Rephaim, the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Girgashite, the Jebusite, the Flybynites, the Mosquitobites, all those. And that is never, that has never been fulfilled. It will be fulfilled when? Next week. No, it will be fulfilled in the Messianic kingdom once the king returns to establish his kingdom, not before. And that will be not the size of New Jersey, but the size of twice the size of the state of Texas. That's going to be amazing. That's a lot of barbecue. Okay, never mind. Are we getting close to lunch? That's probably why. I will establish my covenant between me and you and your descendants after you throughout their generations for an everlasting covenant to be God to you and to your descendants after you. I will give to you and to your descendants after you the land of Palestine. No. The land of your sojournings, all the land of Canaan for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God. Ezekiel 36:24, for I will take you from the nations, gather you from all the lands, and bring you into your own land. Guess what? It's happening today. Because the Jews are in the diaspora, in the nations, and he's gathering all of the Jews to go back into the land, to make aliyah, to return to the land. And it's happening. This is a prophecy. I believe the two prophecies being fulfilled today, and I'll take it. You can take it to the bank. Is Ezekiel 36, the Jews coming back in unbelief? It's been going on for a while now. It's in the process of happening. And the other one is Zechariah 12:3, the whole world turning against Israel. That's also in the process of happening. At least 50% has happened already. Those are the two that you can take to the bank. And it will not change. It will continue to have Jews returning and the whole world turning against the Jews. And friends, in a sense, they're connected. Because God can use things to make us move sometimes out of our comfort zone. I'm not saying that he is the creator of anti-Semitism, but he will allow things to happen so that we will make a move that's better for us. And, you know, people, you know, Israel was born in 48, 3 years after the Holocaust. The end of the war and the Holocaust. There's a connection there. I'm not saying it's all 100% connected, but there's a connection. Same with today. This explosion of anti-Semitism is causing a lot of Jews to move back to Israel or move to Israel. And that's, I think, there's a connection. Number two, occupation. Legal definition, taking control of a piece of land which belongs to someone else. Let me give you some examples. Ukraine and Russia right now, is there any occupation? Oh yeah. Syria, Turkey is controlling and occupying parts of Syria. There's also been, I put Congo, the Rwandan rebels, and Haiti, some gangs, just gangs. So it doesn't have to be another people group. It can be all kinds of different scenarios there. But there's plenty of places in the world where there is actual, real, physical occupation. But guess what? Nobody seems to care. Why? No Jews, no news. That's the sad reality. There is, and of course the media doesn't help, there's this global perception that is basically blinded by hatred. Look at this picture. I don't even have to tell you what it is. If you're old enough, you will look at the picture and you go like, yeah, I see what it is. It's Nazi officers surrendering. I mean, you might not know that it's Paris, okay? I'll give you that much. But it's you recognize the uniforms. Nazi officers surrendering in occupied Paris. Mainstream media today would give you a different caption. They would say something like, Allies use violence to expel innocent Germans. No, but this is what you see today with Israel. This is what we read in the papers today. I mean, nobody would have bought this 80 years ago, but this is what people are just stupidly, excuse my French, I love to say that, stupidly say. You know, they don't, it just boggles my mind. But that's, you can compare it to something like that. And there are groups that are not helping. One of them that was started with good intention is known as Amnesty International. They were started, you know, to bring justice to the world, to people that could not defend themselves. But now, they basically are pro-Palestinian, drinking the Kool-Aid. They are really become a very, very bad organization. Do not support them. Israel's occupation of Palestinian territory. I mean, there's like three lines and five-word phrase here. Since Israel's occupation of Gaza and the West Bank, including East Jerusalem, first began in 1967, Israel's ruthless policies of land confiscation, illegal settlement and dispossession, coupled with rampant institutionalized discrimination, have inflicted immense suffering on Palestinians, depriving them of their basic rights. This military occupation is a key component of a cruel system of apartheid that oppresses and dominates all Palestinians whose rights Israel controls. This includes people living in the occupied territory in Israel and the diaspora who are not allowed to return home. I could spend the rest of today unpacking this paragraph and telling all the lies. There's about 20 lies in that paragraph. People don't pay attention. They're just like, oh yeah, that's really good. They just put a report recently, Amnesty International, is Israel continued to commit the crimes of genocide and apartheid. And here, look at this thing that I underline in the background here. Israel genocide in the occupied Gaza Strip entered its third year. Genocide is not happening, number one. And number two, there's no occupation of Gaza for the last 3 years. And there was none since 2005. So don't tell me that occupied Gaza, because 2005, about 9,000 or so from Israel got out of Gaza Strip and let about 1.3 million Palestinians self-rule in the area. And the result was what? The result was miles and miles of tunnels with money that could have been used to build a beautiful city, beautiful area, even a Mediterranean Sea beach resort. Thriving. Instead, all tunnels. Why? What was the result? October 7, 2023. So, there's really no occupation of Gaza. There's no occupation anywhere when it's your land. You don't occupy your own land. The promise was from Abraham to Isaac, not Ishmael. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with you and bless you. For to you and to your descendants I will give all these lands, and I will establish the oath which I swore to your father Abraham. I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven, and I will give your descendants all these lands, and by your descendants all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. And really, the Jewish people have blessed the world in so many ways. So to Abraham, and then to Isaac through Abraham, but not Ishmael. What does that make Ishmael? Well, it just makes him somebody who does not receive the promise made to Israel, but it does not make him a bad person per se. The Arabs who come from Ishmael, they all need Jesus. All people need Jesus the same way. Okay? So I'm not saying that there's, you know, better and bad people. I'm just saying that the son of the promise, you know, it's Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob through the Jewish line. That's God's prerogative. Take it up with God. Isaac to Jacob, not Esau. And behold, Genesis 28, and behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham, and the God of Isaac. It's clear. It couldn't be any more. It's very clear. The land on which you lie, I will give it to you and to your descendants. Your descendants will also be like the dust of the earth, and you will be spread out to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And in you and your descendants shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Continued idea of giving this land to the Jewish people and the Jews blessing the world. Deuteronomy 1:8. I have placed the land before you. Go in and possess the land which the Lord swore to give to you, to your father, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Again, the Jewish line. To them and their descendants after them, for I will take you from the nations, gather you from all the lands, and bring you into your own land. And something I want to tell you about Jewish land ownership. Muslims will take as much as they can up to a certain point, 100% of the planet, then no more. And then it becomes a global Muslim Islamic caliphate. That's the goal. More, 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 more. The Bible teaches specifically to Israel that is not the way to go. How do we know that? God gave the boundaries. I just told you about the boundaries, and I just told you they've been given to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob through the 12 tribes. But look at this in Deuteronomy 2:5 and 2:9. And the Lord spoke to me, saying, "You have circled this mountain long enough. Now turn north and command the people, saying, 'You will pass through the territory of your brothers, the sons of Esau, who live in Seir, and they will be afraid of you. So be very careful. Do not provoke them, for I will not give you any of their land, even as little as a footstep, because I have given Mount Seir to Esau as a possession.'" Verse 9, "Then the Lord said to me, 'Do not harass Moab, nor provoke them to war, for I will not give you any of their land as a possession, because I have given Ar to the sons of Lot as a possession.'" So God is telling the Jewish people here, "I've given you boundaries, but don't even think of taking something that is outside of that boundaries. Not even a footstep. I will not give it to you." So God is very precise. His word is His word. His promise is His promise. But He won't give more. It's not an open offer to take as much as you want. Islamic theology says take as much as you want and try as many times as you can until it's yours. That's very different. So biblically, the land boundaries exist. They've been promised to God. This is not colonization. This is not occupation. This is being in the land that is biblically given to the Jewish people. That belongs to God, by the way. The Bible tells us that as well. Number three, apartheid. A policy that governed relations between South Africa's white minority and non-white majority for much of the latter half of the 20th century, sanctioning racial segregation and political and economic discrimination against non-whites. That's what apartheid was. This is from the Britannica. I like Jay Sekulow's definition. Apartheid is a combination of two words, the Afrikaans word for separate, apart, and the Dutch suffix "heid," indicating a state of being. "Heid" is similar to the English suffix "hood," as in motherhood or boyhood, meaning respectively the state of being a mother or a boy. Hence, apartheid means the state of being apart. That's apartheid. That was a real thing in South Africa. That was a terrible thing. It was a racial discrimination. That's what it was. In 1973, the United Nations General Assembly declared, at the Apartheid Convention, apartheid as a racial segregation and discrimination is a crime. Right there, they were right. They're not always right. They've become the United Nauseous or the United Nothing, but that was right. 1998, Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court. Apartheid is oppression and domination by one racial group over any other racial group. It's racial. It's all about race. It was all about race. Now, Israel is being accused of apartheid against Palestinians. Let me tell you, there are 2 million Palestinians, well, let me rephrase that, 2 million Arabs living inside Israel. And they have a good life. I'm friends with some of them. There's a family I'm very friends with, very, very friendly, that they've become friends over the years. They call themselves Palestinians. We, you know, it's okay, whatever, you know, but they know I'm Jewish. They know I believe in Jesus. They think it's a little confusing. They're not alone. But they're in the old city in Jerusalem. They have little shops, and we've learned to be very good friends. I buy stuff from them. I help their business. And I do tell them about Jesus. And of course, they're, you know, practicing Muslims. But they live in Israel. And, they, you know, I saw them last March. I'm going to see them next week again. I always visit them. And they hate what's going on right now. They live inside Jerusalem. And they have a good life. 2 million Arabs. I mean, the best life that Arabs have in most of the Middle East is in Israel. And many will tell you. I've told you the story before when one of our tour members, 8-9 years ago, I forgot when it was, during one of the of our tours, tourism visit, fell right in front of Damascus Gate and hurt her back. So I took her to Hadassah Hospital, and we got to the triage, and we spent the whole afternoon there. The triage nurse was a Muslim young woman with the whole hijab and everything, and I'm going like, wow, She says the final word on who's going to go next to be seeing a doctor, and she has a lot of power. And, you know, if she wanted to do damage, she could. But she was trusted because she could be trusted because they knew her. And just one of 2 million. There's a lot of Arabs. It's not about race. But they say, well, you put a wall, you separate, but measures taken to defend against attacks by Palestinian terrorists, such as fences or security checkpoints, do not constitute apartheid. It's security, it's safety, it's to protect the people. And people go in and out. And that wall, by the way, it's not a wall everywhere. Sometimes it's just a chain link fence. I just wish that we could look at other parts of the world and say, see, it's not just Israel putting a wall for protection. There are other people that would, oh wait. Egyptian government is building a massive wall between Gaza and Egypt. Look at the size of that wall. Have you seen this in the news? You're not going to hear about it. Well, it's okay because it really is not that big of a wall. Southern Gaza. Why? Because they don't want any terrorists to come to Egypt. Do they know something we don't? Double standards. They started building this decades ago by building it 16 feet underground because they were afraid that the Palestinians would dig tunnels to smuggle arms. Huh. How would they know that? I mean, again, did they know something we didn't? And then it went up. And then went up, and then now it's like that big of a wall, and it continues to be built. They want no Palestinians into Egypt. You don't hear it on the news. Not even sure you see it on Fox or Newsmax, to be honest with you. That's the truth. You want the truth? Go to Israel. You'll come back. I mean, not I have to convince you. I don't have to convince you, but there are people watching online as well. You want the truth? Go to Israel. You're not going to believe what you see. It would be nice if outside of the Middle East we could find walls to protect. Oh. The protective wall around Vatican City, 39 feet tall. Now, this would make a great movie, and there might be a movie, I don't know, but it would be, because this was built in the 9th century to protect the Vatican from pirates. So, because I think they got a little money in the Vatican. So they want to, but that wall's still there. Now, of course, you go in and out, you visit, it's different. But it's still there to define the boundaries of Vatican City. So walls to define boundaries are not a bad thing, as long as it's not Israel. Double standards. Now, look at this. There were more than 3,000 attacks that originated from Judea and Samaria, that's the West Bank, but that's the proper name, Judea, Samaria, from September 2000 to 2006, that resulted in the death of 1,622 people from terrorist attacks. From 07 to 22, that's 16 years total, when most of the existing fence that we see today was up, 141 attacks. I mean, it's probably a little different, but not much because we're in 2026, but that's very telling. 141 attacks resulting in the death of 100 people. 1,622 in 6 years, 100 in 16 years. What does that mean? 97% decrease in Israeli death toll. 97% decrease because of that wall. You think it's good? Of course it is. Of course it is. It's not apartheid. It's protection. Of course, you've heard about what happens when you don't have walls. This is the invasion of southern Spain or Moroccan. I mean, not southern Spain, northern Morocco, really. It's the same thing. It's almost touching. It's crazy. Of course, Israel did that because they want, you know, for whatever reason, I'm not even sure, but... So biblically, well, there is a what I call the watchman's obligation, Ezekiel 33:6. But if the watchman sees a sword coming and does not blow the trumpet, and the people are not warned, and a sword comes and take a person from them, he is taken away in his iniquity, but his blood I will require from the watchman's hand. There is an obligation for Israel to protect their own people. That's why the wall went up. That's why by going up and separating and checking who's coming in and who's going out, 97% of lives have been saved over the last few years. It's not a small percentage, okay? It's a drastic difference. It's an obligation. What I call it the watchman's obligation. There's also biblical self-defense. I think the best story is found in Esther. In them, the king granted the Jews who were in each and every city the right to assemble and to defend their lives, to destroy, to kill, to annihilate the entire army of any people of the province which might attack them, including children and women, and to plunder their spoil. In 9:5, this was 8:11, in 9:5, thus the Jews struck all their enemies with a sword, killing and destroying, and they did what they pleased to those who hated them. Self-defense, protection of the people, build a wall, self-defense if there is an intrusion. Israel has never gone out to kill for the pleasure of killing. That's what the other side does. Israel is always defending herself. Do you know that the day after October 7th, within a day or two, Israel started to retaliate, to defend Israel, and October 7th was forgotten. And it was like Israel is killing poor Palestinians. And that's all the headlines we got on mainstream media. No Jews, no news. The final one is genocide. And this is what you hear most of today. Definition from the UN, 1948. Why 1948? Because the word was coined right after the Holocaust for the purpose of defining the Holocaust. And it defined other mass killing, but the Holocaust was the event that prompted the coining of the word genocide. Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide. Genocide means any of the following acts committed with intent to destroy, in whole or in part, a national, ethnical, racial, or religious groups as such. Killing members of the group, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part, imposing measures intended to prevent birth within the group, forcibly transferring children to the group, of the group to another group. So let me give you some examples of real genocides in history. The Holocaust, 12 million people. Now you heard 6 million. It's 12 million people, 6 million Jews. 1.5 million children within the 6 million Jews. The Rwandan genocide, 800 Tutsis. Armenian genocide, 1.5 million Armenians. The Cambodian genocide, 3 million people. The Holodomor genocide, 2.5 to 7.5 million Ukrainians in the 30s, early 30s. What about Bashar al-Assad in Syria before he fled to Russia? Or Khomeini in Iran, 6 months ago? 40 to 50,000 people of their own people? Genocide doesn't have to be against the people, by the way. It could be against your own people. Case in point, Iran. 40 to 50,000 people who did not agree with the regime. Now, the genocide attempt was by Hamas against Israel. We know that. There is a website that you can go to. You cannot access it if you live in Israel. It's blocked. But anywhere in the world, you can access it. I'm going to show it on the screen, not the website, just the address. Next. I just want to warn you. You will not be able to unsee what you see on that website. There are videos and photos of what happened on October 7th. If it's something that you need to see, to document, to see it or show people. And some people go like, well, you know what? In respect for the families of the victims, we should not show that stuff. Well, I'm sorry. By showing all the stuff about the Holocaust for the last 80 years, we still have Holocaust deniers today. So by not showing anything about what happened 3 years ago between Hamas, you know, shooting at Israel and killing 1,200 Israelis and Jews, we're really helping with a denial that's going to happen a lot quicker. So no, we need to show. Now it's a choice. You don't have to watch it. But if you want to see it, it's there. It's a personal choice. But again, proceed with caution. You cannot unsee the images. The website is right under the title. It's on. You can take a picture of the screen. You can, as of today, it's still there, and it's an Israeli website, and I believe it's an Israeli website. But for some reason, it's blocked in Israel. Maybe not anymore, but it was. I want to show you the way that the world is spinning this whole thing about genocide. I want to show you a page of a website that is, you know, I do all my research on this because it's trusted, Wikipedia. And now I might look at Wikipedia for a birth date of somebody famous, or are they, you know, when did they die, or where were they born. That stuff is pretty, you know, innocent. I mean, it's not going to change anything. I mean, you know, serious research, I don't trust it that much. Because they always tell you that, you know, it's incomplete, or it can be, I mean, anybody can change it, really. I mean, it's a process, it's not easy, you don't type over it, but you can add stuff. When you do, okay, so it's a page of Wikipedia here. I did a search on genocide. I also did a search on war and famines. A search on war was listed by death toll, that makes sense. A search on famines was listed by countries and death toll. How many people died from famine? That makes sense. You do a search on genocide, and it says, and I circled it in red, list of genocides in reverse chronological order. Nothing else that I've found is in reverse chronological order. Why is that? People don't even pay attention. It's because if you do a reverse, it allows them to put the one that they think is the most recent, which is the Gaza genocide. So, again, subliminally, when you get on that page, boom, Gaza genocide. That's the first thing you see. And then your eyes go to ongoing systematic destruction, intent to destroy Gaza's population in whole or in part through extermination, the deliberate killing of children, making about 30% of those killed, starvation. That's a big one, starvation of children, malnutrition. We'll get back to this in a second. This is a twisting of the order just to spin the story, so you are, this is propaganda, you are indoctrinated, you're conditioned to see this. Most people don't even realize what they're being fed. 50,000 to 60,000 babies were born in the Gaza Strip, equating to one every 10 minutes since October 7, 2023. If the Jews doing genocide in the Gaza Strip, if Israel is doing it, they need to find a better method. Because 60,000 babies have been born, probably a little more now. Definitely a little more, because this is a few weeks old. We're not doing a very good job. 600 to 800 trucks enter Gaza daily. 70% of these trucks carry food amounting to more than five times Gaza's internationally defined nutritional requirements. By March 25, Israel had provided 1.3 million tons of humanitarian aid to Gazans, not to mention medical stuff. The only thing that they refrained from sending is stuff that could be used in a bad way for, like, black market for drugs and stuff like that. But, I mean, providing so much. This just came out literally either the day before yesterday or yesterday. And this is so good, because for them to agree to that, it had to be like there's a smoking gun, and they absolutely cannot deny it. The UNICEF, a United Nations agency, did a coordinated survey. It found that 1.3% of children under five in the Gaza Strip were acutely malnourished, a rate lower than those recorded in several neighboring Middle Eastern countries. Acute malnutrition affected 2.3 in Jordan. No war in Jordan, by the way. 3.3 in Egypt. 3.9 in Saudi Arabia. A rich country, isn't it? 4.2 in Iran. I could understand that. 12.2 in Syria. Yet in Gaza, 1.3%. So UNICEF had to agree there's no famine in Gaza. This is huge because, I mean, now, just mark my words. Watch and wait a couple of days and see how they're going to spin that. It's kind of like the idea of, you know, when global warming didn't work anymore, it became what do they call it now? Climate change. So climate change can go up, down, doesn't matter. It's just change, you know. It's the same thing. This is it. Just watch. It's a matter of days before they spin it. But the reality, and I've got those websites on there, okay? I put it there. The reality is there's no famine in Gaza. They're not killing babies. They're born. There is malnutrition. This is a war, for goodness sake. You know how much Israel is doing to prevent civilians from death. You know that already. I've shared it with you. You know it from other people. They send leaflets. They send messages. They call. They send emails. They say, tomorrow by noon we're gonna bomb this building because there are arms under it and bombs and rockets. So we're gonna bomb it. Please get out. And Hamas keeps them from, you know, prevents them from leaving. Use them as a shield. No other country in the history of mankind in modern warfare has ever done what Israel is doing to protect enemy civilian, which are not their enemies really. You know, same with Lebanon. I was in northern Israel a year ago, and we're looking at Lebanon, and I'm with an Israeli guy who lives literally in this, like 1 kilometer from the border, in Metula, northern Israel, and I go like, what's that? He goes, that's all the destruction. Hezbollah is shooting at us from all over. They've taken all those villages and they're basically shooting at us. We know when they shoot pretty much where it's going to land, on what roof. It's that close. And they go, wait a minute, on the right side over there, all the homes are perfect. The IDF did not destroy those because they're all destroyed, so Hezbollah couldn't do it. But like all of a sudden, on the right side, there's a bunch of homes intact. He goes, oh no, those are Christian villages. They would never touch them. That's Israel for you. That's the IDF. Laser precision. Destroy all the Hezbollah from the intel that they have. And when that one, they know it's occupied by Christian families or Lebanese family, don't touch them. They're civilian. And it stops. And it resumes later. It's crazy. War. Casualties. You know, people carpet bomb places all the time. But it's never an issue. No Jews. No news. So, now, a lot of you were in the Sunday school, so I'm doing a little repeat here, but it's and I don't know, I'm going to try to see how much time do I have. We have another hour and a half. Okay, so that's good. Pizza's coming. How can you help? Well, we want to make sure at this time and late in the game, we want to get, you know, what I call skin in the game. And it's the word skin makes an acronym for security, kingdom, gospel, investment, and nearness. I will go through this quickly because I've covered it in Sunday school. And I also want to end with a couple of stories that are so encouraging. So the first thing that I want to tell you about is this program that we started. If you know a pastor, talk to them about it. Send them to our website at shalomandmessiah.com to click on the No Synagogue Left Behind. In a nutshell, it's on our website. There is this a list of what's the word I'm looking for? Instructions. You don't have to sign up. You don't have to click anything. You just read it on your screen. For a pastor to call a rabbi of a synagogue near them and say, I'm the pastor of church of the fill in the blank. We have a security team, and our security team is helping our flock on Sundays, but really on Friday night for Shabbat or Saturday morning or high holidays in a Jewish community, they're not busy. And on a revolving base, we would love to offer our security team for your synagogue free of charge. We just want to bless you with protection because we love you, because we read our Bible, because we understand the place of Israel in God's plan. Rabbi to pastor is the way the communication goes. If you call, you might not be so lucky because you won't get through. But a pastor will get through, especially of a church that's known in the community. This is proven to work. West Coast, East Coast, Midwest. I have several churches doing it right now. Some synagogues have said, come every week, we want you. They meet with the team, they discuss it, and it's a great, easy way to provide security and to rebuild bridges and to really earn the right to speak and give you a chance to share with the Jewish community. So that's the first one. The other one is, let's see, I told you about, we have the gospel on our website. We also have a series of videos I did a little that I did with Pastor Tom Hughes. So I did this one, I want to show it to you. So a little promo here. Is that going to work?
The scriptures, I found my Messiah. But here is a challenge, and I still deal with it today. I'm Jewish. So how do we deal with that? I grew up completely agnostic. I didn't think I needed a Messiah. I didn't think I needed a Savior. But it was made clear to me that I did. There's an expectation of two messiahs. My people see it as two messiah, but you and I would say we see it as two offices of the same messiah, two events.
Why does saying that the Jews killed Jesus cause deep harm?
Because it's a lie. You and I were all responsible for his death. So Jews, Gentiles, all of us.
So go to our website, and Tours Messiah will give you all those videos. This was a little promo of the videos. We answer all the questions, and they're good for Christians to be equipped. They're also very, very appropriate for Jewish people who are not believers, but who are searching. They have questions. They go like, they try to understand what it means. So they're safe. I made them in a way that they could be used for Christians to educate them and for Jewish people who are genuinely searching. And the last one is Skin in the Game, the Ministry of Presence. We have, we supply the IDF. You can support us by going to our ministry fund on donate on our website and donate towards Israel. Israel ministry 100% goes to Israel. We buy life jackets. I tell people all the time, we have to keep them alive. We have to save them physically so they can get saved spiritually. So we have to keep them alive. And so we buy supplies, little ambulance, ATV vehicles. We've done a lot of that. We do it because of people like you. You send us support. You pray for us. And a lot of churches and people are supporting our ministry. We are buying equipment for the IDF because the Israeli government gives most of their supplies to the Air Force. Then they supply the Army and then the reservists, which is a big, big part of the Army of the armed forces in Israel. Is made of reservists who have done their service and they serve until they're about mid-40s. Right now, a lot of them, instead of serving a week or two a year, are serving, they've been serving for like 150, 200 days. And I know several of them, and I'm going to see them next week. It's taxing on the wives, on the mothers. We're going back in 10 days, and we're trying to figure out a way, we're doing the research right now, a way to cater to their PTSD needs. It's a real problem right now. Suicide and divorce is through the roof in Israel right now because of the war. So we're trying to figure out a way, again, with the gospel some way, to provide needs with PTSD. So pray that God would show us, give us wisdom. And I got to wrap this up, and I have a story to tell you to finish. But by going and bringing supplies, I mean, they call me every week, and so we need some of this, we need some of that, and we try to, we partner with other ministries and we do the best we can, but there's nothing better than coming there, meeting with the IDF soldiers. I'm going to do a barbecue, I think on the 25th of August. We're catering a kosher barbecue on an IDF base, and I'm going to have a chance to tell them about God. I mean, I love my job. This is so cool. And is it dangerous? Well, I mean, they're in the middle of a war and, I'm on a base. I'm very protected. I mean, I'm not worried about it. Every time I go, I end up in a shelter once or twice. It's just part of the game. But let me wrap up with this. We have a YouTube channel, YouTube channel is... has a lot of teaching and a lot of interviews, some with, Pastor Andy and many others. And about a month and a half ago, I thought, what do I have to lose? There's a guy that I follow online. His name is Hillel Fold. Hillel Fold, an Israeli who moved to Israel from America 35 years ago. And he's married, 5 kids. And he is a really great advocate against anti-Semitism. and he pushes for Jews to go back and make Aliyah, return to Israel. And he's very connected. He's an Israeli influencer. He lost his brother in 2018 in a terrorist attack. Brother was going to grocery shopping. He got stabbed and killed. Anyway, it's a whole story. So I emailed him, introduced myself, and I thought, Orthodox Jew, religious, he will never answer. He answered, and he said, yeah, let's do the podcast. Pick a date. I'm going like, oh, wow, really? So I picked a date. We recorded the podcast about 2 weeks ago, post-production. It's posted on our website. It's like two or three podcasts ago. It's called Ezekiel 36. And it's Hillel and I, 45 minutes. We're talking, and he's going, Olivier, you know, how come you're not making Aliyah? I said, well, you know, as a Messianic Jew who believes in Jesus, they will stop me from making Aliyah. He goes, I've never heard that before. I said, Hillel, seriously, it's a known fact. Even Huckabee is working at trying to change that. Because he goes, well, Olivier, you're Jewish. And I go, you know I'm a Messianic Jew. He goes, I know, I checked you out. But you're Jewish, you should be able to come back. I said, I agree with you, but they won't let me. He said, what are they going to do? He said, well, sometimes they ask and they find out you're a Jewish believer. They say, you're a Christian, now you can't come. You don't have that, you lost that right. And he said, I've never heard that before. And I said, Hillel, I will do more research and privately, and it's all on the podcast, you can watch it. Privately, I will get back to you. And then he pauses and he goes, okay, in 2 or 3 minutes, could you tell me what it means to be Jewish and believe in Jesus? I live for this. And I started talking about the Messianic prophecies, and I said, it's not fair. We don't have time. He goes, you're right. And I'm almost done with the podcast. We got to do another conversation. He goes, granted, we'll have to talk about this again. He goes, but will you allow me, if I listen to what you think Jesus is the Messiah, will you allow me to tell you why I think he's not? And very genuine. I just love our conversation. And I said, absolutely. That's the way it should go. You listen to me, I listen to you. We compare notes about the Messiah. It would be fun. And he said, okay, great. I said, one more. I don't want to do it on Zoom. Next time I come to Israel, I want to have lunch with you and we do it together. Done, he said. August 27th, lunch at noon. Keep me in your prayers. This man is a great influencer. There's like pictures of him with Netanyahu, and he knows everybody. But he's asking me, what does it mean to be a Jew, believe in Jesus? This is happening in Israel. It is going to happen more because of our ministry of presence. And that's what it's all about, a ministry of presence. So I want to encourage you to continue supporting a ministry and praying for us. In the meantime, and I'm 3 minutes past, but I'm done, I promise. And I mean, 3 minutes past is still about 30 minutes early for Pastor Andy, right? Yes. I had to throw that in somewhere. And so I'm getting in trouble with Anne now. No, I'm not. She's going, yeah, I know. Okay. So this is what we do in Israel, which is a big part of a ministry, which really we did not anticipate when we started Shalom and Messiah, because we wanted to equip Christians to rescue and shelter the Jewish friends. And some of you remember the early concept of being available, and it's still there, but we changed the process. We don't put people on a network because we realized there was too many holes in this, and security was becoming a big problem. So instead, what I do is I get you involved. I send you a packet, a little packet with books in it and tracks and instructions on how to be a Schindler or a Corrie ten Boom to your Jewish friend, Jewish neighbor, Jewish coworker. You know somebody Jewish, or you know somebody who knows somebody Jewish. So I'm going to show you a QR code in a minute, and that QR code will ask you for your address. We don't share it with anybody. It's simply so I can send you the packet. If you already received it from a conference or a previous meeting, don't ask again unless you need another one. That's perfectly fine. We send them for free. They're not free to put together, but we send them for free. So that's coming next. First, I want to show you, it's a 1 minute little video. It's going to summarize exactly where we are.
Dear, it's getting really scary to do right now. Our neighborhood shop won't serve Jews anymore.
We can't serve you here.
What do you mean?
We've been coming here for years.
They're hanging signs with pictures of all the Jewish families in town. And they're coming into Jewish-owned businesses and shouting at us.
Everyone eating here has blood on their hands. We don't want you filthy people here.
Just this past Shabbat, a member of our congregation was stabbed on his way home from temple. Dad keeps reminding us that most people are good and that it's only a small but loud minority who actually hate us. But Mom worries that all of this feels awfully close to how the Holocaust started. I hope she's wrong. Everyone always promised never again. But here we are, less than 100 years later, and the signs are all in front of us.
We're back in the 30s and 40s, friends. It's a reality. So this is the packet, and if you want it, scan this, put your name and address, and we'll send you the packet. And you need this at your house, because this is going to equip you to witness to Jewish people. And you got one of my books for free. You got another book of Messianic prophecies, a couple of tracts, and some instructions. If you need it, scan this, you'll get it. And we won't ask you for anything. But you need to get this. You need to be involved. You need skin in the game. And by the way, also pray for me, because as I'm going to Israel, these are Old Testament, full Bible, with the Old and New Testament in Hebrew. And our goal is to put one of these in the jacket of every single soldier that we meet. Not as a bullet protector, although it could, but as a door to Yeshua, the Messiah. Amen? Let's pray. Lord, thank you for this patient group listening to me, Lord, and forgiving group because I went long. But Lord, thank you for this church and what they mean to us, the involvement, the connection, the blessings. Bless Sugarland Bible Church, Lord, and thank you for Pastor Andy and his love for Israel and his understanding of Scripture. Such a blessing to me, and our friendship, such a blessing as well. So continue to bless him and his family and his church. Thank you for using us and blessing us with the opportunity to be on the right side of history, to be on your side, God, and to bless Israel. Lord, we want more Jewish people to come to a saving knowledge of Yeshua. So show us where, show us when, show us who. We will be there. We'll say what Isaiah said, Hineni, here I am. And we will just obey the call. In Yeshua's name we pray. Amen. Thank you.